Australian people are being sleepwalked into a system the Attorney General cannot even articulate.
Mandatory data retention.
The cost of losing this data is an explosion in unsolved crime.
We've heard from politicians.
If you don't support the metadata laws, you're supporting pedophiles.
We've heard from commentators.
A privacy infringing activity.
But there's one group we haven't heard from. The people that actually use it.
Right now, it would be so easy for me to slip in my ex-girlfriend's number in the current process under any investigation and no one would pick it up.
This week on Download This Show, a police insider speaks out exclusively on how it works.
Never was a request denied on legitimacy.
How it doesn't.
You know, you've got all these Aussies caught up criminally.
And what it actually means for you. Right across Australia, this is your week in technology, the internet and culture. My name is Mark Fennell and welcome to a very special episode of Download This Show. Yes, that's not a serious introduction at all. Don't forget, you can tweet along with this show, hashtag download this show. We are at RN Download. Very big welcome to this week's panel. She is the news editor from the tech website CNET, Claire Riley. Welcome back to Download This Show.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
And Josh Taylor is a senior writer with ZDNet. Welcome back.
Thanks.
And of course, we start with mandatory data retention. It is the government's plan to keep metadata, your metadata, in fact, for 2 years. It has some very big critics and some very big proponents, some more articulate than others. Critics argue that it is a huge breach of privacy. It's poorly written, doesn't cover the major internet services like Facebook and Google. And of course, many argue that it represents massive overreach from the police. The government argued that it's necessary to fight, well, apparently everything.
And if we don't get it, it will be a form of unilateral disarmament in the face of criminals.
We've been approached by an individual who was formerly a police employee who worked directly with metadata. They wanted to correct some of the misconceptions around what the police do and also call for major changes to what's being proposed in the current legislation. Now, if you've already made up your mind on metadata, and I know lots of people that listen to this show certainly have, you might agree with some of it, you might disagree with some of it, but this is how someone on the ground sees it. To preserve the anonymity of the source, their voice has been changed.
There are only three different justifications we have for accessing metadata. First is if someone's life is being threatened. Second, protection of government income. And thirdly, investigation of a crime punishable by at least 2 years in prison. So anything from assault to graffiti. But they add investigation of a missing person, even though it's not an offence to be missing. In the past, we just said something like we're investigating a suspected murder in order to get access. Let's say, hypothetically, you and your wife split up after a particularly violent fight. She gets a no-contact order from the court. Mark, in a fit of love-filled remorse, calls her a day later to say how sorry he is. Both on mobiles, she calls police. Police ask me to grab the needed info. So I grab her number, 9 from the police report, and check with a mega-simple system that's filed with the data that she signed up to at the telco store on day one. I then grab the reverse call charge records of who called her. Then I check your outgoing calls on you. I can then prove a phone you have subscribed to called a phone that she had subscribed to during a no-contact order. Then I get statements from all the required telcos who state how the info was recorded, blah, 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 blah. Present it all in court.
The blah was definitely my favourite part of that.
It's like 20 pages of techno shit.
Okay, so how is that process going to be enhanced by this new proposed legislation?
This new legislation would only allow me to look 2 years back. Right now, there's inconsistent data held by each of the telecommunications companies. It's the only difference. Basically, your phone bill plus the numbers and the times of people calling you, it's never content of text or voice. Content needs a warrant. I rarely checked for ISPs other than dear internode, who has this IP address at this time, at this date, and that gives you the subscriber. Mobile data f*** the police up big time. Telcos don't usually hold the mobile broadband IP addresses of what websites you're accessing on your phone. I mean, why would they? They don't care what you look at. Data retention forces ISPs and telcos to hold data for purposes they don't need, for times that are irrelevant to their purposes. A good analogy would be to ask a library to keep the history of their systems of who borrowed a book. They, the library, they don't care. They want to know who has the book. but that information is only required until it's returned. Data retention would force them to keep that information for 2 years. Just the name of the book and the borrower, not the words in the book.
Right, so the police can't see, for example, what apps I have.
I never saw app details. Even location is simply the mobile tower IDs, not ever precisely where you are. I think the public think that we have more detail than we do.
Okay. What about the massive data that's held at the communication companies end? You know, before people like you request, where would that be held and at what level of security?
That's entirely up to the telco. I mean, it could be China, it could be the data centre in Alice Springs. We don't give a shit.
Sure, but should consumers care? I mean, that process, for argument's sake, could it be shifted over to, say, tracking people torrenting copyright-infringing material?
Well, if the government had talked into making it a criminal offence, yes, but it's not interpreted that way by police at the moment. Copyright infringement is not a criminal offence. It's a civil wrong. But all it would take would be simple lobbying by a financial backer of political parties to make copyright seen as theft, and then bang, you know, you've got all these Aussies caught up criminally. Who's to say access wouldn't be backdated?
Okay, and that data that, let's assume, is being held in China somewhere, once it exists, could it be subject to civil suits?
That is a major concern.
And do you think that becomes a valid argument against mandatory data retention?
I think it's the most poorly communicated yet highest impact outcome.
Why are you talking?
I guess I'm so disappointed that we never just come out and talk through the issues. The only talking heads you see on TV have never even seen the metadata requests. I mean, mobiles weren't even invented when they were walking the beat.
The other issue here is that the legislation as it currently sits is very vague on an actual definition of metadata. Why is that, in your opinion?
This largely comes from the number of agencies who use the data. Everyone has a wish list of who they are trying to get included. If given the choice, most would want content held for 2 years too.
Can you describe for me what you think the legislation should be so that it balances the needs of people like you, the police, but it doesn't overreach? For example, when do you think warrants should come into play? At what point?
Look, ideally, I'm okay with 2 years, and at a base sense, basically keep my phone bill, including received calls, but I think there should be no retrospective access, i.e. torrenting becomes illegal in 3 years, no going back. I'd like the crime threshold to be lifted to 10 years. Remember I said it's a very low bar for access and investigating crimes with 2 or more years in jail. I'd like to see that raised to 10. It easily still covers offences like terrorism, serious and organised crime. I'm saying cut the small shit out. International studies show that data doesn't help. I think there also needs to be a standardised reporting of access. We report the number of requests, i.e. 756,000 requests for metadata were made this financial year, but not the number or the type of requests made. What I'm saying is that we should be like 5 by Google account accesses, 4 by Twitter, 50,000 telco subscribers, 60,000 call charge records, etc. Also, raising the standard for access. Never was a request denied on legitimacy. Cost, sure, but never legitimacy. I want a magistrate or a totally independent party to authorise the request with more detail. I mean, right now, it would be so easy for me to slip in my ex-girlfriend's number in the current process under any investigation and no one would pick it up because there's no detail. It is the process that is more decaying than the legislation. The Australian people are being sleepwalked into a system the Attorney General cannot even articulate.
If you just tuned in, that is the sound of an individual who formerly was a police employee who worked directly with metadata, calling for some reasonably big changes to the law and the process that goes into data retention. We are joined in studio by our panel this week, Claire Riley from CNET and Josh Taylor from ZDNet. Now, some of the things he's talking about changing there, Josh, some of it's already being discussed, isn't it?
Yeah, Labor's flagged. Bill Shorten wrote a letter to Tony Abbott last week basically saying, look, we support the idea of what you're trying to achieve, but there are a lot of things that are wrong with it. So, for example, we don't know the exact sort of data that they want to keep. They haven't actually released the data set. And secondly, we are starting to get an idea of the costs. So anywhere between sort of $300 and $400 million to set up these systems. That's not including the ongoing running costs of all the telcos having to keep all this data. And also, you know, what it means for journalists and their sources. If agencies have access to this data without a warrant, then you know, they can go in and see who a journalist has been talking to when they've written a nasty story about them. So,
or when they've spoken to a confidential source.
Yes, exactly.
I have no experience of that whatsoever. The public seems almost split down the middle. The approval rating for this has actually jumped up in the recent times. 40% of Australians are in favour of mandatory data retention, according to an Essential poll out earlier this week, and 44 are against. What is it that you think the public should know about mandatory data retention, Claire, that they perhaps don't?
Well, it's very interesting because we've couched a lot. I think a lot of people in favour of the scheme have probably been swayed a little bit by the way it's been framed. A lot of the discussions around metadata have been couched in terms of child protection, in terms of stopping terrorists with the Charlie Hebdo attacks and the Lindt Cafe siege in Sydney, constantly drawn up as examples of things that we can stop with metadata or access to metadata, despite the fact that France has a data retention scheme and that the person behind the Lindt Cafe siege was already known to police. So those points aside, it's very difficult to argue with a scheme like this when you say, well, we want to protect children from pedophiles online. We want to be able to trace sex offenders. You can't really argue with that. Philip Ruddock, in the many hearings he's been involved in, has continually asked people appearing at the hearings whether the right to privacy should be held above his own right to life. When you frame it like that, no one's going to shoot down an argument like that, but it's really important to think, as we heard in the interview, often it's not about big questions of life and death. It's about really just run-of-the-mill, everyday stuff where someone's privacy can be seriously infringed. So I suppose my thoughts are for the Australian public to actually know that it's not the 1% or the 0.5% of cases where we're chasing a terrorist or we're chasing a sex offender, because those are serious crimes that deserve to be prosecuted. But it's more often and more likely going to be the everyday cases where someone's privacy is seriously attacked.
And I think the other thing that people don't realise is that it's not the government storing this data. So it's not like the NSA where they collect all these phone records in a big, you know,
server. Yeah, we're not talking about PRISM here. No.
This is basically 300 or, you know, 600 telcos, depending on the figures that you go by, in Australia that will be all required to keep this data. And all it takes is for one of those companies to have a breach. If it's Telstra, that's probably the worst case scenario because they have more customers than anyone else in the country.
It's quite well known that Telstra keep very, very long records of your data and your billing.
And they've actually said on the record that, you know, they currently keep all their customer records on 13 different systems, but if this is brought in, they're going to pull it all into one system, and all it takes is, you know, for a hacker to target that one system, and then they've got everyone's data. And I think that's something that hasn't really been sort of brought up a lot.
And the telcos talk about, and now there's been so much public knowledge about this this scheme, that hackers now know that there's potentially, if a scheme comes in, there's 2 years' worth of information stored in one central location, potentially overseas with weaker security, or, you know, we don't know that yet. But it's a honeypot. It's continually being called a honeypot for hackers. If there is a data breach, we won't have to find out about it because we don't have laws in Australia that stipulate you have to disclose a data breach. Mm. It's way too many questions.
And the other thing is as well that although the legislation has been, you know, compromised in limiting the number of agencies that do have access to that data, it doesn't prevent other agencies from applying to have access to that data, and it doesn't prevent it from being accessed in other ways, so through the court process and things like that.
Mm. Which agencies do we know in the new legislation will have access to it and which will not? Will have to apply?
It's basically the AFP, state police agencies,
ASIO,
crime commissions, things like that. The agencies that haven't got access but have had access in the past, like RSPCA, ASIC, a whole bunch of other agencies.
How about the ATO? Because one of the things that's really struck me in that conversation is you said one of the reasons is protection of government income, and I just heard tax audit there. Is that how it would work?
I think that they're not included at the moment, but I believe they'll probably apply as soon as that happens.
Yeah, they'll be first off the rank, and the AG, the Attorney General, is not exactly going to say no to a government agency like that, because it's ultimately the AG's sign-off, and George Brandis has proven that he's very strongly in favour of data retention and access.
And that's one of the big flaws with the legislation, is that not only does the Attorney General get to decide which agencies can then apply for access after, and it doesn't have to seek a parliamentary approval, but he can also include extra data in the data set that's being retained without having to get parliamentary approval. It's all through regulation. It's not through legislation. The legislation will set out the type of data that will need to be retained, but there's actually a separate data set that will be defined in regulation that will set out, you know, we want call records, we want IP addresses, we want everything like that. So even though the explanatory memorandum rules out, you know, browsing history, things like that, it's not impossible for the data set to then include something that could actually identify the browsing history of people. So,
and so Parliament is just passing a bill that is, they say it's technology neutral so that it can be updated in the future, but what that essentially means is it's a little bit vague about what can potentially be stored about a user's personal metadata. And regulation essentially means that without a full kind of vote from the Parliament, they'll be able to change the specific kinds of data that can be kept on individuals. And that, I mean, that's really concerning that so much is coming through in regulation, that it comes down to approval from one person, the Attorney General. Oversight comes after the fact. So we talked a little bit in that spot about warrants, but you won't require a warrant. So there'll be oversight. They say that it's going to be psychologically important for people to know that there's oversight for data requests. But as we've heard, it can be a relatively simple process to get metadata. Mm. And if there's only oversight coming after the fact from agencies that are already a bit strung out when it comes to resources, I just don't, there are just way too many gaps.
Just to pick up on that, the rules around oversight and who does get to oversee is going to change in this new legislation, yes?
The Commonwealth Ombudsman will have oversight, but again, that is after the access has already been given. The Labor's sort of proposing that maybe there'll be some external oversight of it, you know, down the track. But I feel like it needs to, there needs to be some sort of approval process before the data is handed over. Because, say, in the case of a journalist, if you've got a source that you're trying to protect, and the agency gets access to it first, and then, you know, the Commonwealth Ombudsman comes in after and says, oh, you shouldn't have done that.
Your whistleblower is already revealed, yeah. I think it's going to be much easier for law enforcement and agencies to beg forgiveness rather than seek permission.
Yes.
Talk to me about what the likely changes that the ALP will want.
I reckon it's going to be defining the actual data they want to retain in the legislation, and also maybe, so a lot of issues have been made over the length of a period of time that they want to retain the data for. So 2 years is, they've said it's a compromise. You know, they've talked about, oh, we would actually like 7 years, but this 2 years is a compromise. I don't know where they came up with this 2-year compromise, because it wasn't through public consultation.
Mm. No.
One police officer actually said, look, I'd ideally like it to be kept forever.
Yeah,
but
could we go back to the BC era?
Yeah. The 2-year period is something quite significant. The really important thing to point out is that all the telcos have come before the parliamentary committee and said, we are not going to start chucking out data. Mm. We're not going to start keeping less. You are not, the constant argument is they will have less access to data being retained. But they've all said, we're not going to keep less information. You'll be able to retain the status quo. So there's also stats out there to sort of indicate that the majority of data requests are coming for data that's been captured and recorded in the last 6 months. Yep. Certainly the cases of the 10% are probably quite serious cases, but presumably there are other avenues to follow, and there would be a warranted process for those kinds of data recovery or for those kinds of law enforcement processes. So the 2-year period is a really big thing for me.
Doesn't really match what's happening internationally either. Most jurisdictions where they have a mandatory data retention scheme in place are for between 6 months and 18 months at the most. There's very little 2-year retention periods.
When it actually comes to the usefulness of mandatory data retention and metadata in terms of law enforcement, is its value in preventing? Because one of the issues that Scott Ludlam brought up in Senate Estimates is that there hadn't been any real evidence to suggest that it had fixed crime clearance rates. Mm. But is it useful in terms of, for lack of a better term, mopping up the mess?
It basically becomes like the first avenue that they go to investigate a crime. If they're wanting to find out more about someone, they go look at who they've been talking to. So it generally happens after a crime has been committed. It's not basically, oh, these people are all talking to each other, let's go get them now.
And they say it's to establish persons of interest and to establish networks, and then they can rule out people and say, all right, well, we're going to follow Joe Bloggs rather than all the other 10 people. But I don't think it's necessary to invade the privacy of every single Australian who has a phone, who accesses the internet at any point in their life, to justify ruling out people who aren't people of interest.
So when Tony Abbott says that to not have this legislation represents a massive disarmament in the face of crime, is that an overstatement, do you
think?
Yeah,
it's a bit of hyperbole.
It's an eye-twitching overstatement.
And to link it to, say, the Link Cafe incident, it's been very, very disingenuous because he was, the man involved in that was known to police. He had websites and YouTube videos and things.
He'd appeared on Radio National. he'd been around.
Yes, yeah.
I think it's very easy to cherry pick, and we've seen a lot of politicians do this, cherry pick the cases that work for them. Talking about different international jurisdictions where it works, where it doesn't work. To call to mind in ways that people don't if people don't understand the really nuanced details of this, which is very easy to understand because it's quite complex, they're either being spoon-fed an analogy about an envelope, and we just want your envelopes, and envelopes are fine, you know, because they just have your name and they're written in pretty pink pen. They're either bringing that analogy in, or they're using the stick and saying, well, overseas, it's pretty serious, and do you like terrorists? And why do you want our children to die? Those are not reasonable arguments, and they're not good ways to frame this debate. It's not informed. And so I think it's just scaremongering.
It's kind of hilarious that it's, you know, on the one hand, we're not keeping that much about you. It's not identifying that much, but we absolutely need it. It's critical to everything that we do.
We're not keeping much about you, but we're keeping everything about you, and we know where you live.
Let's talk about what he calls the highest impact element of this legislation, which is in relation to torrenting. There's two points here. There's torrenting from a law enforcement point of view, and there's torrenting from a civil point of view. And there's a very big case at the moment, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But I want to start with this point about how, at the moment, police don't regard illegal downloading, torrenting, as a criminal act. It's a civil wrong. Is that ever likely to change, do you think? Is there any indication that might change?
Oh, I wouldn't put it past the current Attorney General to potentially look at criminalising it. But
sorry, Attorney General and Minister for the Arts. It's a very important double bill there. In the case of torrenting, we've got to remember that rights holders are donators to political parties.
I believe Village Roadshow single media donator to both political parties
just
last year.
They have deep pockets. They're showing that they have political influence, but it's not illegal at the moment. It's just a matter of a civil suit, but I can see it being criminalised in future.
All right, you are listening to Download This Show, your guide to the week in technology, the internet and culture. We are talking about mandatory data retention and its impact on you. We are in studio here with Claire Riley from the tech website CNET and Josh Taylor from the tech website ZDNet. Yes, there are no tech websites that don't end in the word net. Now, one of the issues that was brought up in the earlier interview is civil cases, and there is actually a civil case going on at the moment, which is between the producers of the film Dallas Buyers Club and the internet service provider iiNet. Now, the producers are suing iiNet for the personal detail of something in the vicinity of, I think, 4,800 Australians who downloaded it. You guys were both in court this week. How's it going?
It's pretty thrilling.
It's very long.
What was really interesting to me, you just mentioned they're quite concerned about people downloading the film, but what they said in court was they don't really mind about downloaders. They're more worried about uploaders. Yeah. So if you're participating in what they call a torrent swarm and you just download the film, they aren't that interested in you. And those people in torrent swarms are called leeches, as a fun
Hold on.
Side note.
The way torrenting works, though, is the moment you are downloading, you're almost always uploading as well.
Yeah, but you can settings.
You can turn it off, but does that seriously mean that if I turn off that setting that I'm never going to be sued, though?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but they probably won't go after you.
The way this Maverick Eye software that they use to track torrenters works is essentially it gets a tiny little bit of, I think it's 16 kilobits of data to assigned to a certain IP address that got that data from, and that's all that they track you from. So even if you're just leeching these films off BitTorrent, you're still, you know, leaving a footprint at least. And this has been some of iiNet's argument, saying, how can you tell that, you know, just a tiny little sliver of data is representative of a person downloading or sharing an entire film? Because you can't actually prove that just based on a tiny, tiny little bit of data.
And is this the way you've detected this information? Is it accurate? Do we know that 16 kilobytes at a certain time, which hasn't necessarily, we don't know how that time is correlated to Australian time, when we're talking about dynamically allocated IP addresses or your computer having a different unique identifier from 1 minute to the next 10 minutes later, how do we know that your computer was actually downloading that? And if your computer was, how do we know that it was actually you, Mark Fennell, at that computer rather than someone who lives in your house, someone who is visiting?
Because immediately beforehand I posted a selfie on Instagram. And then immediately
Totes downloading. Yeah. They've also mentioned that they're not going to be going after the mentally handicapped children or
prisons
or people in the military. The rights holder fellow was...
it was so funny. He's basically saying anyone that will give us bad press, we're not interested in targeting.
That press would ruin us, he said. So
he really said that?
Yeah, the press would ruin us.
So they're being open about their media strategy of who's okay to sue.
Yeah.
Talk to me more about Maverick Eye. So you mentioned it earlier. It is the software that they use for allegedly copyright infringing. Walk me through exactly how it works.
So Maverick Eye is a three-person company in Germany that does this work for a whole bunch of different film studios. And basically what happens is it selects a number of titles, finds the torrents for those on torrent websites, and then downloads basically an entire copy of the film on that, and then, you know, watches segments to make sure it is actually the film that they're watching. And then they log all the IP addresses that were associated with that torrent at that time, and then pass them on to, you know, the people that they want to start, you know, suing. Mm.
So they can match the ISP to the particular IP address, and then they say, all right, we've established these ISPs, the ones we're going to go after.
So how do the fortunes of Maverick Eye change when you have an entire country filled with 300 to 600 ISPs keeping 2 years' worth of metadata and IP addresses?
It just makes it much more of an attractive target. If you know that these records are there and you can get guaranteed access to them, then that's going to change the dynamic entirely.
So, having been through this process of going through the court, hearing what we've heard about mandatory data retention from the government and hearing from our insider earlier in the show, how would you like to see the legislation around mandatory data retention rewritten?
I would like to see the period shortened. I think that the data set should actually be defined in legislation and explicitly rule out, content browsing history, things like that. Actually define the access regime in the legislation, saying you can't add any more agencies, and if you try, you can't. This information cannot be found through discovery process through the court. That would limit it quite a bit.
I would just really love my Christmas wish in February. I'm asking early, but I would just really love I'd really love our MPs to actually scrutinise this. Mm. Bill Shorten, the leader of the opposition, through the second tranche, I think, of national security legislation that went through, he wrote a letter to Tony Abbott afterwards, after it was passed, after his party voted for it, and said, oh, wait, I've actually got some concerns about press freedom here. I'm really worried about this. Yeah. I don't think that's good enough when we've got MPs kind of slacking off on the job. Take a forward step and sort of scrutinise the bill, familiarise yourself with what you need to know. Don't do a Philip Ruddock and say that, you know, Skype is a phone for your computer. Get a little bit more aware. If you don't know, listen to shows like this wonderful show we're on right now. Become informed, because just passing it through without any scrutiny is my absolute fear.
Oh, and get a warrant.
Get a warrant.
All right. You have been listening to the voices of Josh Taylor from the tech website ZDNet and Claire Riley from CNET. Mark Fennell is my name. Lots and lots to talk about. Make sure you join in the conversation on Twitter. The hashtag is DownloadThisShow. If you've only heard the show for the first time, hi. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/DownloadThisShow. And thank you for listening to another episode of Download This Show.